You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The protagonist of Peter Carey's new novel, His Illegal Self, is a 7-year-old boy named Che. His parents, who met as student radicals, have gone underground, and he's being raised by his wealthy maternal grandmother, who calls him Jay. He longs to be rescued by his parents, and in a way quite different from any he could imagine, he is. Alfred A. Knopf publishes the book, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome Peter Carey back to the show. Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
What do you mean by his illegal self?
Well, I wanted to... this is a boy who grows up with the sense that his parents are living outside the law, that they are illegal. Mind you, the only source of information he has is from the kid downstairs in 5E, who's a teenager, who says his parents are great American heroes and whatever. So his sense is that this is his legacy, that they are illegal, he will be illegal, and indeed he will be outside the law.
The sins of the parents are visited on the next generation.
Or he would regard it almost at that stage as a sort of a badge of honor, not so much a sin. But yes, they are the good guys and they're outside the law.
Is there a reason Che is 7 years old? Isn't that the age of reason within the Catholic Church, the earliest age in which one can be held responsible for one's actions?
God, I wish I'd known that.
Peter, you come from an Irish background.
Yeah, I think the religion somehow was washed overboard between Ireland and Australia. I don't know what happened.
Okay, so well, it was a thought. You know,
that's a good thought.
There's going to be a graduate student who's going to make a big thing about that, you know.
Well, you know, I think sometimes you do get these sorts of readings which sort of crawl over your text like a Google robot. And they go things like, one of the character's fathers is 5'4". Carey's own father was 5'4".
I'm sure.
So there's plenty of work there to do, I think.
Well, what does Che understand about his life at the beginning of the novel? Does he realize that his grandmother has altered the way his name is pronounced, among other things?
Well, like kids, yes, I believe. Now you ask the question, maybe he doesn't. I always assumed that he did.
Well, you're the writer.
Well, writers have all sorts of great holes in their understandings of what they do. But I think that the basic thing about Che, like kids in that situation, is he wants peace. He really doesn't want trouble. And if that's what grandma wants, you know, and he can find a peaceful way to exist within that, that's what he'll do even while he's yearning for his lost mother. And he loves his grandmother, and I think you find that he has quite a complicated degree of understanding and sympathy for her, too.
Well, he, as you say, he learns about his parents from the kid downstairs, and everyone depends on information from the outside world to gain a more complete sense of their parents' identities. But in his case, he hasn't seen his parents since he was an infant.
No, he's sort of dependent upon... Well, kids are always like this. You know, we grow up sort of being dependent upon whispers and half overheard things and things while we're standing in the corner of the room when the adults don't know we're there. Well, so we're all like that as kids to a degree, and Che's like that to an enormous degree. And he's meant to understand things. He's like some sort of lovely insect picking up things with his feelers and so on. So that's how... Because that's the only way he's going to find out anything about his parents, because his grandmother really does not want to confront the situation that they're in.
She won't even let him watch television or go to any other source that might reveal something about his parents and the world that they come from.
And she says, I'm going to bring you up Victorian, she says.
Yeah, but you know, you can understand, you can appreciate why she might want to do that for the kid.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's all sorts of arguments why any of us might want to bring any of us up Victorian to be free from, quotes, all this.
On the other hand, you have a lot of stuff here about people should not be able to keep any secrets. I didn't say that well, but characters in the novel talk about someone's right to know.
Well, that's
not Peter Carey's idea. That's the character's idea.
No, well, people do tend to get sort of self-righteous about this sort of thing. There's one character who's turns out to be a very important, complex, but ultimately likable character called Trevor, who has grown up has been an orphan, has been transported to Australia as a doctor from a Dr. Bernardo's home, and is an orphan. And so, seeing half understanding Che's situation at best, and deciding that Che, like, he is an orphan, he decides that Che has a right to know. It feels, it is the self-righteousness that some of us, all of us at some time, sort of suffer from when we notice that somebody else is in our situation or going through our trauma and whatever.
Well, we were talking about those graduate students, and we have orphans here. We have orphans in any number of your books. And it has been posited that the fact that you were sent off to school when you were a kid and felt kind of like an outsider is the reason that you write so often about orphans.
Yeah, I know. And I'm sorry I ever acknowledged it. I mean, somebody pointed this out to me, and finally at the age of 50, I figured, you know, there must be something in this.
Well, why do you think you write so often about orphans?
I don't care, in a funny way.
It just happens.
You know, and talking about it too much, there's an English journalist is saying, well, that was a long time ago, and he was sent to a very fancy boarding school, and yeah, he's won the Booker Prize twice. Why doesn't he just get over it? You know, well, my intention in all of this is not really therapeutic. I mean, my imagination is limited, I suppose, by life experience, and sometimes one does find oneself going along the same old ruts, and I'll make a character 5'4". Oh my God, my father was 5'4". And it seems like a sign more of inadequacy on my part than anything else.
Well, actually, this book has been described as a departure for you. Do you see it that way?
I think every book's a departure, and I want it to be a departure because I would be bored with myself. If it wasn't in the end, it is for other people to make patterns. One of the things, and I will tell you, I never read reviews, but still reading reviews, it does seem that people are finding patterns. You know, as usual, Carey is doing this, or this breaks with his this or that. I don't know. I'm just trying to make something new and beautiful that didn't exist before, and I hope I have.
My guest is Peter Carey. His latest novel is called His Illegal Self. It's published by Knopf. The other protagonist in this is a woman whose name is Anna, but who's called Dial for dialectic. And the reader is unsure for a while whether Dial is really Che's mother or not. She comes to rescue him. There have been a number of novels published in the past few years about former 60s radicals. Most recently, Harry Kudzru's My Revolution. A few years back, there was Russell Banks' The Darling and Susan Choi's American Woman. Why do you think people are starting to write about that now? Is it because they're thinking about that in contrast to what's going on with the Iraq War? Is there something else?
Well, I can't speak for the others, but I think for myself, one is, it can come down to something as pathetic and small as mining your life for something that you always wanted to write about. And in my own case, the thing that I remembered was living in what was a hippie community in the 70s.
Was it as bad as the hippie community in this book?
I love that place. They hate it. That's all. No, it wasn't. They were. There's a scene in the book where something sort of rather horrendous happens to a cat because it's against the rules to have cats. Well, we did have a meeting like that, but in our community, no one could ever enforce a rule about anything. So, no, they were not like that. But
I mean, there seems to be almost a fascist side to all these free spirits, where they have all of these rules, and the rules are.
I don't know. You guys, whoever you are, talking about the character who, well, I'm talking to you, when the character who wants to get rid of the cat because there is a rule in the community for no cats because they kill the indigenous birds. As I said, in real life, no one would enforce a rule. I am really siding in my heart with the person who you're calling a fascist, because I think if you're going to have a rule, no birds, no cats, well, have no cats. But it wasn't like that. So I don't think that unpleasant character was actually fascistic in her opinion.
There's also, class is also a major factor in this story. First of all, Che is brought up by an upper class grandmother. Anna Dial is anything but upper class. In fact, there's an interesting thing where the radicals, the American radicals, all look down upon her because she comes from such poor stock. They're all privileged kids who are out there to try to help poor people.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I was in Australia during that period, and my experience of Australian radical, with the exceptions of the Maoists, who always wore very expensive cashmere sweaters, but with everybody else, generally, you know, they weren't rich at all, and a radical, by definition, was not going to be rich. And so it was very interesting to me sort of starting to engage with the notion of Harvard in that period, and I had a couple of friends who were there. And suddenly, you know, slow to realize this, that these people were very privileged. And then you start to start, and they were not very good at getting out organizing at the factory gate, for instance. And so you can then start to look at the schism in SDS and the Weatherman faction and the desire to sort of go and sort of start a revolution by blowing things up. That's a sort of the sort of petulance of rich kids who can't get their own way too quickly.
It's interesting that the hippies in Australia have so much contempt for Americans, considering the fact that almost everything they're doing was inspired originally by Americans.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. Well, it's a very the relationship between Australians and Americans has always been intensely complicated. And you want to put it at well before this time, Australians, of course, Australia's a colony that never had a war, never made itself free from Britain. And Australians always were very anxious to sort of take a high place in the colonial pecking order. So they would tend to be rather snobbish about Americans, you know, which is sort of extraordinary. And some of them will still do that. They say, oh, those Americans have got no sense of humor. They've got no irony and they're always loud and vulgar. And it's really taking a sort of a 19th century British position about the colonies. So there's that thing that exists all the time. There's also huge affection when Americans come to Australia. They get on with Australians particularly well. Australians are absolutely the captives of American popular culture. You want to read about Paris Hilton on the front page of a paper, go to Australia. You know, there's all of that. And then there was the Vietnam War, which we were, you know, passionately against because we had conscription. Our friends were being conscripted to be killed. So there's another element in all of this as well. And there's a sort of there's the false knowledge that the people on the periphery get about the people who drive the popular entertainment and popular culture of the world. So all of these factors are at work in this.
I'm not going to tell all the plot, but...
No, don't. It'll drive you crazy. Don't. No.
But you say in the book that it's a law of childhood that you aren't punished immediately for your crimes, but must wait in agony for your crime to be known.
Oh, isn't that just our experience? That came out of that line. You know, it's the novelist's ridiculous to say it. It is a law of childhood, but it has some humor in it. I mean, that's my experience as a child with the things when you've done something wrong and not been found out and waiting to be punished. Yeah.
Meanwhile, also, I would say that almost every kid on some level wants to be an orphan, wants to be rescued by somebody else. In fact, many kids even wonder whether their parents are really their parents.
Yeah, it's common, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's interesting to see all of these themes come here because it's all about people trying to figure out where they fit in a very complicated world then. And I think very different than the way people fit in today, maybe because people were being radicalized in the 60s. And today we're not seeing people radicalized by a war.
Well, I think the big lesson that everybody learnt was do not conscript the children of the middle class because you will have trouble if you do. And that's what happened then, and that's what they're not doing now. And so it's tougher for young people to find the basis for their rebellion.
Peter Carey is a two-time Booker winner, or now we say the man Booker.
I just say Booker.
Do you?
Please.
His latest novel is called His Illegal Self. It is published by Knopf. And as always, it has been a great pleasure to talk with him today on the show. I thank you so much for coming
by. Well, I'm doing a reading at NYU. You meant to say that.
Oh, I will say that in a moment. Okay. Don't worry about it, Peter. I'll take care of you.